Welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 category smart. This is Jessie Colhagen, and you're listening to the Life Note, Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear, by Elizabeth Gilbert and summarized by Emily Snyder. As always, we will begin with a quote. Question: What is creativity? Answer: The relationship between a human being and the mysteries of inspiration. In this book, Elizabeth Gilbert, beloved author of Eat, Pray, Love, walks us through creativity. She shares the wisdom and insights she's learned throughout the years of her relationship with her one true love. Gilbert shows us that we are all creative, and that to live truly creative lives, we must embrace the search for our big magic. Big thought number one: living with courage. Don't let fear take the wheel. Quote: Creative living is a path for the brave, and we all know that when courage dies, creativity dies with it. End quote. Right out of the gate, Gilbert hits us with a question central to creative living. Do you have the courage to bring forth the treasures that are hidden within you? We all have something very special sheltered within us, and though each of us has different passions, talents, capacities, and aspirations, one thing we all have in common is that we are walking repositories of buried treasure. Quote, the universe buries strange jewels deep within us all and then stands back to see if we can find them. End quote. Our hunt to find those jewels is what Gilbert calls creative living, and the often surprising results of that hunt are what she calls big magic. But in order to live creatively and find our own big magic, we must first have courage. Now, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, it's important that we clear something up. When Gilbert talks about creative living, she isn't necessarily talking about living a life that is consumed by the arts, although if that's what we're after, she gives us full credence to do so. What she means by creative living is living a life that's driven by curiosity rather than by fear. Living in such a way that we are constantly bringing forth the jewels that are hidden inside us is a fine art in and of itself. Some of us may be thinking, that sounds a little scary, and we'd be absolutely right. But there is always a reason to be afraid. As Gilbert puts it, quote, everything is so goddamn scary, end quote. But if there's one thing that experience has taught her, it's that courage is a necessary prerequisite to living a creative life. When we really think about it, fear is boring and mundane, and oftentimes our fears are based in non-reality and non-truth. It doesn't take any special gift or talent to be afraid. Even tadpoles get scared. Our fear is not original. It's boring. So why would we let the most boring thing about our identity dictate our lives? We shouldn't ditch fear completely, though, because it does serve its purpose. Gilbert says we should acknowledge our fear and accept that it's part of us, but under no circumstances should we let it take the wheel. Our highest self and our creativity are the ones who are allowed to drive us through this beautiful road trip of life. It's not always easy or comfortable subduing our fear and taking action in spite of it, but it's always worth it. Because if we don't learn to travel with our fear, we'll never go or do anything interesting. What a pity that would be. Life is so short, so why should we go, do, and create boring things? It's time to start living creatively. We all have treasures hidden within us. Quote, bringing those treasures to light takes work and faith and focus and courage and hours of devotion, and the clock is ticking, and the world is spinning, and we simply do not have time anymore to think small. End quote. The next big thought is titled A Magical Partnership, The Enchantment of Inspiration. Quote, I believe the creative process is both magical and magic. End quote. Now that we've talked about fear, it's time to talk about magic. To Gilbert, magic exists. It exists in the creative process. She believes that creativity is a force of enchantment, not entirely human in its origins. Yes, this may sound a bit crazy, but stay with us. Gilbert explains how she thinks creativity functions. She believes that our planet is also inhabited by ideas. Gilbert sees these ideas as energetic life forms separate from us, but capable of interacting with us. These ideas are driven by a single impulse: to be made manifest. The only way for that to happen is through a partnership with a human. Humans are the conduit through which ideas pass out of the ether and into reality. According to Gilbert, ideas spend eternity trying to track down humans who are open and available. When they find the right candidate, they pester until they have that human's full attention, and then they ask, "Do you want to work with me?" We can respond to this question in two ways. We can say no, and then we're off the hook. But if we say yes, it's game on. Quote, you have officially entered into a contract with inspiration, and you must try to see it through all the way to its impossible to predict outcome. End quote. When we enter into this contract, Gilbert suggests that we do it humbly and joyfully, cooperating fully with inspiration. Quote, you can receive your ideas with respect and curiosity, not with drama or dread. End quote. We can clear our path of whatever is keeping us from living our most creative life. We are neither inspiration's master nor slave. We are its partner. There is also an unsettling flip side to this magic of ideas. While ideas are allowed to come to us unexpectedly, they are also allowed to leave unexpectedly. Ideas do what any self-respecting entity does when they're neglected. They hit the road in search of another human partner. This can be devastating, but Gilbert says that the best way to deal with a lost idea is to move on quickly, with humility and grace. Simply find something else to work on and keep busy. But Gilbert tells us the most important thing to understand about the encounter between a human and creative inspiration is that we can't expect it to be there for us all the time. Quote, it will come and go, and you must let it come and go. End quote. We will all have flashes of brilliance, and we will all go through dry spells, creatively speaking. This is where hard work comes in. Gilbert believes that our genius is often sitting around waiting on us to show it that we're serious about a particular line of work. It watches us as we put in hours and hours of hard work, and then when it's convinced that we aren't just messing around, it jumps in and offers its assistance. Sometimes that assistance will last until the project is complete, and sometimes it will only stick around for a few minutes. The key is to work either way, assisted or unassisted, because that's what we must do to live a fully creative life. The next big idea is titled, Don't Ask Permission. Creativity is your birthright. Quote, you do not need anybody's permission to live a creative life. End quote. We don't need permission, we just have to choose to live creative lives. Gilbert uses a personal example here, detailing how her folks were doers. They did whatever the heck they wanted and never asked for permission. They just made stuff. So when it was her time to strike out on her own, she adopted the same attitude. She wanted to be a writer, so she was going to be a writer. She just decided to make stuff. Some of us may be thinking about our own upbringings, how our parents pressured us into a certain field, or how they discouraged us from pursuing our passions. Gilbert says, quote, forget about it, it doesn't matter, end quote. Somewhere in our family tree, we all have doers and makers who did not sit passively by waiting for stuff to happen to them. Humans have been creative for a very, very long time. The earliest evidence of human art is 40,000 years old. It's pretty safe to say that all humans are innately creative. There are no chosen few when it comes to creativity, even if the guardians of high culture try to convince us of that. Our creativity is older than we are, and it lives inside all of us. We do not need a permission slip to pursue that creativity. In order to accept that we don't need permission and to live in a way that leaves us free to create and explore, we must possess a strong sense of personal entitlement. The word entitlement gets a bad rap, but creative entitlement doesn't mean acting like a princess. Quote, creative entitlement simply means believing that you are allowed to be here, and that merely by being here, you are allowed to have a voice and a vision of your own. End quote. Adopting this sense of entitlement will allow us to take creative risks, pushing ourselves out of our comfort zones. Many of us might fear that our ideas are not original enough to warrant this kind of creative entitlement. We've all heard the phrase, there's nothing new under the sun. There is some truth to that statement. Most things have already been done in one way or another, but we haven't done most things. Gilbert stresses that ideas don't have to be original to be good. Once we put our own expression and passion into an idea, it becomes authentically ours. At the end of the day, authenticity trumps originality. And just as our work doesn't have to be original, it doesn't always have to be important. We don't have to have a grand plan to save the world. We can do it simply because we enjoy it, or because it helps us heal, or because it helps us make sense of the world. Quote, your own reasons to create are reason enough. End quote. The next big idea, falling in love with our craft. Practice makes perfect. Quote, the aspiring poet is constantly lowering a bucket only halfway down a well, coming up time and again with nothing but empty air. The frustration is immense, but you must keep doing it anyway. End quote. When Gilbert was 16, she took vows to become a writer, and she means that literally. She invented her own ceremony and wrote her own vows and dedicated her life to writing. The catch was that she didn't put any conditions or restrictions on her path. Her deadline was never. She vowed to write forever, and so far she's kept those vows. Sure, she was terrible at first, but writing is her craft, so she stuck to it. And anyone who has read her books knows that she's obviously improved. Quote, "It's a simple and generous rule of life that whatever you practice, you will improve at," end quote. When we practice our craft, going through similar motions over and over again, we eventually start to learn something. We start to learn our creative patterns. We'll be able to step back and see the different phases of our process that we go through every time we set out to create something. We'll recognize the parts where we want to abandon the project, or the parts where we want to sit on our butts and eat ice cream instead of putting in our practice for the day. And ultimately, we'll find that if we stick with our process through all of those lows, we'll emerge on the other side. We'll hear our creativity telling us, "Stay with me. Come back to me. Trust me." The key to persistence is finding something that we are passionate enough about that we'll stick with it even when it sucks. As Gilbert so eloquently puts it, quote, "If you love and want something enough, no matter what it is, then you don't really mind eating the shit sandwich that comes with it," end quote. What she means is that nothing is sunshine and rainbows 100% of the time. If we really want to be a professional writer, we won't mind getting manuscripts rejected. If we want to be in the best shape of our lives, we'll deal with the long workouts and not eating cookies every day. If we really want to be a parent, then we won't mind the 3 a.m. feedings. Our big magic lies in something that we want so badly we're willing to stick with it regardless of the negative side effects. But why exactly do people persist in creating despite all the shit sandwiches? Easy, because they're hot for their craft. They're hot for their craft the way people who are having an affair are hot for each other. They'll overcome any obstacles in order to be alone together. That's how we should feel about our crafts. Quote, "Let yourself fall in love with your creativity like that and see what happens," end quote. Being crazy about our chosen type of creativity is the only way we will persist, and persist we must. The next big thought is love over suffering, detaching from the outcome. Quote, "Nature provides the seed, man provides the garden, each is grateful for the other's help," end quote. Gilbert has gotten into the habit of asking her writing students two questions. First, "Do you love writing?" To which they practically always answer yes. Second, "Does writing love you back?" This second question almost always solicits a total and a dismissive, "Of course not." While some students mean that in a literal way, that writing is not capable of human emotion, many of them mean it in a different way, that writing is difficult and often unrewarding, that it's like that hot girl in high school that everyone loves but can't have, so they descend into a deep pit of despair and pining. And this is how so many people believe the creative process should be. Fraught with strife, pain, and anguish. They believe that if you aren't in some sort of emotional turmoil, you'll never produce anything worth mentioning. Quote, "Far too many creative people have been taught to distrust pleasure and put their own faith in struggle alone," end quote. Suffering has somehow gained a reputation for being the only emotional experience that can yield creative genius. Far too many artists have mistaken self-destruction for a commitment to creativity. We've all heard about the tormented artist who descends into a drug-fueled abyss or some terrifying mental disorder. But, quote, "addiction does not make the artist," end quote. Gilbert refuses to fetishize suffering. She doesn't buy into the tormented artist trope. To her, we can live creative lives and still be decent human beings. She has chosen to trust love instead of suffering, and she encourages us to do the same. Gilbert maintains that our creativity does love us back. In her own life, she's placed infinite trust in her work, so it loves her as much as she loves it, and it wants to play with her just as much as she wants to play with it. We should feel the same about our creative pursuits. While we should love our creative pursuits and trust that they love us back, Gilbert also maintains that we should take things lightly. We often refer to our projects as our babies, but she tells us to lighten up. A painting, a piece of music, or a project proposal are in no way, shape, or form the same thing as a human child. Believing that our work is our baby leads to nothing but trouble. When we feel that way, we'll have a hard time making edits, accepting criticism, or sometimes even sharing it at all. So Gilbert says we should abandon our pride and just get over ourselves. Finally, before we move on to the next section, we should talk about what Gilbert calls the last act of creative trust, putting our work out there. This is the fiercest trust of all. quote, fierce trust demands that you put forth the work anyhow, because fierce trust knows that the outcome does not matter, end quote. The universe will give us the outcome we need, not the one we want. But fierce trust tells us that the outcome does not matter. Instead, it asks us to stand strong in the truth that we are worthy, regardless of the outcome, that we were born to create, regardless of the outcome. The next big thought, the sacred divine, meaning and meaningless. Quote, creativity is sacred and it is not sacred, end quote. To wrap up this book, Gilbert shares a story from Bali. Balinese dance is one of the world's great art forms. It's beautiful and ancient, and it's also holy. Back in the 1960s, tourists began flooding to Bali, and they became increasingly interested in the sacred dances. The Balinese weren't shy, so for a small fee, they welcomed tourists into the temples to watch the dancing. But as interest continued to grow, the temples became too crowded, so the dancers decided to go to the tourists. The Balinese started performing their sacred dances at the resorts in order to better accommodate the paying tourists, and everyone was happy. Everyone, that is, except a group of high-minded Westerners. This group started throwing a hissy fit, saying that performing these sacred dances around a swimming pool was sacrilege, that they were desecrating the sublime. Ever the gracious hosts, the priests and masters of the dance decided to make up some new dances, ones that had no spiritual significance, for the dancers to perform at the resorts. The sacred dances would be returned to the temples, quote, where they belonged. So that's exactly what they did, adapting moves from the sacred dances, they composed gibberish dances. Over the next few years, the young dancers grew into these gibberish dances and transformed them into something magnificent, almost transcendent. These dances had arguably become more sacred and transcendent than the ones the tourists were griping about in the first place, so the priests started incorporating them into their rituals at the temples. Quote, at which point the meaningless dances became holy dances because the holy dances had become meaningless, end quote. This is precisely the paradox that Gilbert is trying to drive home. We should approach our creativity lightly, but also take it seriously. We are both terrified and brave. What we make matters, but also does not matter at all. If we make space for these paradoxes, we can make anything. Quote, so please calm down and get back to work, okay? The treasures that are hidden inside you are hoping you will say yes, end quote. So there we have it, Gilbert's process for tapping into the universal magic of creativity. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to sharing with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.